Welcome to Be Customer Led, where we'll explore how leading experts in customer and employee experience are navigating organizations through their own journey to be customer led and the actions and behaviors employees and businesses exhibit to get there. And now, your host, Bill Stakos.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Be Customer Led. I'm your host, Bill Stakos. I'm really excited about today's guest. Jamie Swaljan is Head of Client Experience Strategy Enablement for T. Rowe Price, just across the bridge from me. Now, I'm really excited today because I am a practitioner with a lot of deep domain expertise and customer experience with us, and I think that you're going to learn a ton. And Jamie's just a fantastic person to begin with. I've gotten to know her over the last couple of months. So Jamie, welcome to the show. It's good to have you on.
Thanks, Bill. I'm excited to be here.
Cool. So we always start off with just, you know, understanding people's story and their journey and, you know, how you got. You've been doing customer experience work for a while now. How did you get into the space, and you know what got you hooked?
Yeah, it was actually Craigslist that started me off. I was looking for a job, and it was going to be either McDonald's or an internship. And I looked at Craigslist, and there was an internship for a market research company, and I called them. And they said, come over right now. So I did. And I ended up showing up in a husband and wife's basement. They had just started their own firm. And so they were hiring their first employee, which was me. And I did interviews with some of their clients, and I pulled together presentations. So it's just a great opportunity to start to get into the mix. And I really liked it. So I sort of used that market research focus to pull me through a couple different areas in my career. I always really liked looking at data and trying to understand people. And so throughout my career, I did a lot of that type of work. And then it would end up resulting in a recommendation where someone would say, okay, great, go do it now. And so it was this balance of having these sort of execution and strategic roles versus like data orientation. Yeah. And then probably 5 years ago, I really realized like this is a thing and it's called customer experience. I'd like to do that. Let's form a role around that. And my CEO said, sure. So I've been formally a practitioner for the last 5 years. And I was excited to have the opportunity at T. Rowe for a really formal role in strategy and enablement.
That's awesome. I love that story. And I love that you came out of sort of the, you know, the roots of the work, right? Understanding from customers, talking to them directly, figuring out how to solution and make something better. You know, having that experience, I've always thought, and that's how I came into the business too. I mean, this is going back over 20 years ago though, but I've always thought that actually set me up for success over the long term, right? Now, interestingly, you've been in healthcare for a good part of your career too. Talk to us a little bit about the transition, because a lot of CX practitioners might hop from industry to industry, or others on who are listening might be thinking about different industries, right? Just because different industries are hiring even now because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about that transition. You know, what was different? What was the same?
Yeah. So, you know, for me, it started with, if you're going to have a job with customers, like, you know, there's no two more important things than your health and your money. And so I was able to have a really great start to my career on the one side with health. And then when the opportunity came up to look at the money side of things, I was excited to sort of transition. I think, you know, at the root of it, it's a lot about just like understanding people's needs and motivations, like what's important to them. And when you really get down to it, it's, in health, you know, it's so much about, you know, caring for my family. And it's such a foundational need that you have in health that if it's not right, it takes over your life in a negative way. And in financial services, you know, it's, of course, I work in a company where data is so important. The culture, I would say, of the organization is such that they appreciate why it's important to people. Mm-hmm. Beyond the data and really think about how important some of these financial aspects are to people. And so that's what really carries me through, is the thread of really making sure that I appreciate what the needs are of the customers in those industries, and then I work for a company that does the same. And so there are a lot of things corporately about the size of the companies and how it works and how we think about risk that are really the same. And so that, you know, I try to focus much more on what's the same than what's different. And there are a lot of similarities there.
That's pretty cool. That's good to know. Well, for listeners who are thinking about changing, I love that advice. Just think about what's the same versus what's different. Because a lot of cross industries, the work we do, there is a lot of similarities. One, the toolkit's not going to change, right? Industry to True. Industry.
Yep.
The customer and their needs certainly may, but nonetheless. But there are still those kind of fundamental core needs that every customer is looking for. So you've been in the CX space for a little bit now. You mentioned the data side and how that's really important. You know, I just my own perspective, I've seen data really come to the fore in our work over the last 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah.
How have you seen it evolve? Like, what are you really most excited about?
Well, I mean, just from my own personal experience, you know, when I interned at the Craigslist opportunity that I was talking about, I physically was reading verbatims from clients that were like on handwritten pieces of paper. And then I was analyzing them, you know, using tick marks on like the back of a notepad. And so if you think about something like that and how that works today, it's pretty amazing with the push of a button, what you can learn and just not just, you know, so one of the other evolutions, right, is like, it's so much easier to do that. And then the other is, I think, being able to be more predictive using mm-hmm. the technology that we have. So it's not just about making it easier and displaying data in a way that is visual, but also being able to use it and be predictive about, if you see this data, then what does it mean? Mm-hmm. So there's just been such a transformation on that. And also, I think for our CX side, what's really important and impressive, and you and I have talked about this, is that, you know, satisfaction and how clients feel about you as a brand is totally evolved in terms of how companies think about it. It used to be out of the goodness of the company's heart, and sometimes compliance related was a good reason for you to want to have satisfied customers. But now with data, you can prove and bear out that satisfied customers lead to higher growth and really tied to business value, mm-hmm. which is great.
So those are such important points. I was recently looking at a report, a 2020 CX report someone had shared with me, and I'm still always shocked at how many teams are still new, or companies are new, or getting just into the CX space and standing up these teams, whether it's 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5 people. You know, the topic of a CX strategy felt like really central to the setting up for a team for success. How do you, you're heading up strategy where you are, how do you think that team should be approaching a customer experience strategy? Like, where do they start?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's something I've really been excited about doing in both of my roles, is to build something and figure out what the right steps are. I mean, you know, one of the things that I think is critical about building a strategy is to really appreciate your culture mm-hmm. and where you're starting from. You know, when your employees are aligned, or how they're aligned and thinking about customers is something that really makes everything easier if you can really appreciate what that is. So, you know, one of the things is like, test the temperature on the culture and what's going to resonate and work for people. And how are they currently aligned to their clients? That was, like I said, one of the reasons why I was excited to join T. Rowe, is because they have a lot of employees who have been with the company for a long time and have evolved from client-facing roles. And so they really have a deep appreciation for clients. And so, you know, it really becomes, strategy becomes about, so what's the set of priorities we want to take mm-hmm. on to deliver on improvement? And, you know, there's a pretty systematic way that you can think about it. First, you know, I always want to appreciate, like, what's our current state? What do our clients currently think about us, and in what areas? Love to orient on the journey as a first step, and really build out that, what does the customer journey look like? Let's start there. You can always use your internal team members to help you start to build that out. And then I always love to validate that with external knowledge, and think that there's a lot to be learned when you can do that. And hear from clients themselves. And then, you know, you can quantify that, of course, too, yeah. right? To help you to prioritize the things in that journey that will get you the most value. And then, you know, I'm a big believer in human-centered design as the way to move things forward. So much of, I think, sometimes the gaps can be in any organization, how teams work together.
Yeah.
There's just so much power in collective intelligence and working together, because customers don't care what department you work in. So
they're all for the same company. Yeah.
Yeah. So to the extent that, right, you can orient a team focused on a customer through a human-centered design sprint is another sort of key to success, I think, when you think about strategy and how to move it forward and make it come to reality. So those are some of the things. I think once you have that current state, also building to the future state. Yeah. So what do you want it to look like? And that's something that people are really excited to do. It's so good to see about cross collaborative, like, sort of groups come together, and someone from a totally different area having a great idea about something not in their wheelhouse is a really empowering thing for people from an employee experience perspective. So to have people collaborate and work together to build the future state is something that I always think is really good in terms of making sure people are bought in.
So the idea of cross-functional collaboration and using a human-centered design approach to get to even an early stage prototype is so critical. Do you have people that help you do that, or are you running, like, workshops yourself? Like, how does that work where you are, or maybe where you've been?
Yeah, where I've been, it was, it became central to our strategy. It was something that we took on early to say, okay, how can we, you know, because I think you talk about strategy internally in a company and people go like, we've had a lot of those, you know, like, why do I need this one? I already have a business strategy. I've got a, you know, all sorts of strategies. Yeah. I've got a channel strategy. I got a social media strategy. Like, I got a marketing strategy. So for us, we wanted to, you know, the thing that we did was we said, all right, well, let's come up with our strategy, but then let's immediately move into execution using this human-centered design sprint approach, so that we can come back and demonstrate the value that that brings in execution of a strategy. And that's where, you know, using the people who were involved in that, they came forward like such advocates. Awesome. There were people who came forward after participating in that exercise with us and said, you know, like, I was ready to leave this company. And because I participated in this, I felt valued and, like, part of a process that was important, and I'm going to stay. So that was the best comment that I've heard out of that. And just was, again, why the human-centered design sprint was just such a value add to any, like, strategy that we were going to execute on.
I love that story. Oh my gosh. I mean, human-centered design is just a powerful toolkit to bring into any organization. But man, when you hear stuff like that, you just get so motivated and driven. You're like, this is why I do this work every day, you know?
Yes. People were feeling like, you know, the over the fence collaboration, right? Where it's like, I've done my part, now you go do your part. And you're like, but I don't know where I'm fitting in this process. It's just so, you know, and when everyone came together and worked together, it's such a beautiful thing to see.
That's awesome. Hey, let's switch gears for a little bit. I want, if we can just jump back to changes in our practice or in our discipline. And you mentioned sort of the you know, change in technology and being able to capture things in different ways. And like, you know, years ago, and I remember myself like, you know, writing down like themes as I was going through like verbatims and saying, oh, this is another one like this, and doing the, you know, crossover the five, you know, that whole thing. How, you know, I'm a huge believer actually in teams today, CX teams today cannot be successful long-term without a customer experience management platform in place. Mm-hmm. If you use one, don't say who it is. We're not here to promote anybody, but talk to us a little bit about that change and how that's maybe even changed your role and the CX teams that you've led or been on.
So I've seen that both ways. I've seen it where I think any way you can use a platform to capture client feedback is going to be helpful to the cause. Hmm. I've seen it used in a way that's sort of exclusive to a team that manages that process. And I've seen it in a way that is extremely available and transparent to anyone in the company. And the second one is the one that I've seen work the best.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think it makes people nervous. And, you know, I'm coming from the background of, I am a researcher and a practitioner. And so, you know, when you think about people getting in your numbers, that feels a little bit scary.
Yeah.
Will they use them right? Like, will it be accurate? Like, you know, there's a part of, right, sitting on my shoulder, there's a devil that's like, don't let them do it. but in seeing it in practice and what it's like in an organization, when you see people, you know, presenting, you know, for a cause using data from that platform because it's available and transparent and they're using the voice of the client to do it, it's so powerful and it's so great when you can see people using it in practice. And so I think it's that platform that is awesome no matter what. It's the transparency and how it is so available across the organization is also really powerful and can and makes it usable.
So when you say there's so much around, you know, the democratization of insights across an organization. Do you advocate for anyone in the organization to be able to have access, or is it like maybe like 50% or, you know, or a mix in there? I'm curious because I've gone back and forth on this issue a lot because I do get concerned about people using data the wrong way. You know, if you don't have data expertise, you kind of drill down into the five people that said, this is the way that you thing that you should do. And actually that's what you want to do. So all of a sudden, like, yeah, that's what we should do. That little devil and angel is playing on my shoulders all the time too. Like, how do you break free of that? Do you say just give it to everybody we'll hope for the best? Or like, yeah,
I do. Here's, you know, I have to think this way in a lot of things, like as anyone in customer experience knows, like, you're a facilitator there for everybody else. It's everyone's job, right? It's not just my job. It's everyone in the company's job. If I believe that, then I have to believe everyone needs to have the same access to data about the customer, right? I feel like, so I force myself to try to overcome that. I mean, it comes down to, right, what are the trade-offs? And isn't it better if you have some customer knowledge and you think about it a little bit, even if it's not perfect, then not at all? Right. So that's what it comes down to for me.
I
still fight with myself daily on it.
Well, it's part of the role, right? I mean, data is power, right? Yep. Data can be manipulated especially if you know how to do that, you know, and you don't want it to be used for the wrong reasons, right? Because I feel like folks in our roles like ours, like we're altruistic just by nature, right? We're empathic and we want to do what's right. And not saying people are bad, but sometimes they make decisions that, you know, based on data and what it's telling me, that maybe not have been the best choice. But I hear you. I'm more lean to the side of just give it out to people so they can use it versus definitely not like one team kind of doling it out, like candies on Halloween, to drive their own agenda. That's just a recipe for failure. When you think about, you know, technology and tech adoption, I always, you know, think about it more as like, how is the firm evolving, or can you drive the evolution of the culture, right, by putting that the data and the insights out there versus necessarily the the evolution or the maturity of the CX team itself, right? Like,
yeah.
Is that why you're kind of putting all that data in? Because you've seen the benefits of it driving, I'm putting words in your mouth, but like, I'm curious that how you've seen that evolution happen in companies.
I am currently in a culture that's highly collaborative. And so I have seen teams work together and also financial services. Like these teams are really, they do appreciate data. Mm-hmm. They're coming from a place where there is definitely a data maturity level that most of the company has because of the industry too. I've seen people collaborate around it. And so there's also something in that like people check each other and themselves in that collaboration model. That's also helps to make it really successful and make me feel comfortable about it.
So, yeah, I guess it does depend on what kind of organization you are at the end of the day. And how, I guess you do have to mature as an organization and want that. Otherwise, you're putting information out there that's not necessarily going to be used, which is also dangerous. I know even before this call, we were talking about sort of ROI almost, or sort of the value of CX. You know, some of this ties into the strategy conversation we were having before.
Yes.
I feel like proving out the value of customer experience and the return on CX dollars, as an example, is something that so many folks do struggle with. I actually created a financial model to be able to put into in front of a CFO to say, here's the return that we'll get, right, based on CX goals. How are you doing that, or how have you approached that problem? In the roles that you've been in?
Yeah, I'm learning. It's definitely a process. One of the things that I'm learning is like obviously it's not one size fits all with that. There's not the cookbook approach to it because different companies care about different things, and being in different industries has shifted what matters most. You know, I've seen where your end measure is cost savings, mm-hmm. right? Well, that's a really different sort of strategy than revenue generating.
Yeah.
And CX can help with both of those, but it matters. It's a different strategy and approach that you would take depending on which. And so, I mean, there's always, you know, when we've tried to come up with like our top 10 list or whatever of initiatives, there's always some that are real direct. People will stop calling. It will cost less, right? Yeah. And then there's always some that are like really tied to revenue. Like we will offer this product and people will buy it more. Those are real easy. And then there's those hard ones where, I mean, they're just not that clear. People might actually call more and they might, you know, and that might not be a bad thing.
Yeah.
And so that is absolutely something that I am still working on. To sort of one of the last things we were working on was how does behavior change based on your satisfaction levels? So not even necessarily tied to an initiative per se, but just proving the overall value of it and looking at ROI of what does the behavior look like of someone who's highly satisfied versus not.
Yeah.
Do they spend more and do they call less and do they do all of those other things? And so I'm still in exploration with that one, but we've had a few easy wins on those direct cases.
That's awesome. Well, I hope you get there. I know that's like literally is like the holy grail and gives you frankly street cred to go do more interesting work, right? Within an organization. So insanely important. You mentioned journeys before, you know, when we were talking about strategy a little bit. I'm a huge believer in journey analytics. I think it is transformational for an organization. How are you doing anything in that space today, or like what are you seeing in that? And if not, that's okay, but like how are you seeing that maybe change some of the ways that we work or could work?
Yeah, I think the journey is helpful in that it put, you know, for me, this is for how I think about it is like, it's really a framework for what it feels like to be a client. And that's why it's so important to orient on it, right? I mean, what I think about when I talk to some of my like internal clients and leadership about it is that it comes across as maybe some sort of hype or like some kind of like buzzword almost, you know, if it's not something that you're orienting on yet. And so when I really just boil it down and trying to think about what is the point of the journey, it's that you can see end to end what it feels like to be your client. And once you know that, then you can start to build experiences with that in mind, as opposed to what can happen on the other side, which is that you think about this really great solution, but it only sits by itself and doesn't work its way through the experience. So to your point about the analytics, it's been really helpful to think about the journey and then to layer on the analytics that you're talking about. I have done it manually where it's we measure each through a survey, each area through like a touch point sort of survey and, mm-hmm. and orient it to the journey and measure that over time, layered in with other data that we have that's shows impact or any other sort of internal data metrics, just to help try to prioritize some of those things. That's how I've used it to develop strategy. And right now I'm in building it mode of trying to define what that journey really looks like.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, I like doing that. So I have to remind myself that because it's a lot of hard work.
It is.
But it's building it mode. Like, what is that journey and what does it look like?
Can I ask, how long, I mean, for folks that have never done the work, right? Mm-hmm. I know how long it takes for us. It will take from start to like analytics appended or integrated into the journey. It's like a 6-month process. If you've got a better solution, I'm curious to hear. If you've got to dial down more, I'm curious to see how you're doing it.
I was going to say a year, so I think you're already
ahead of me. We'll talk after this.
Yeah. No, I think you want to do it right. So it's, you know, there's a way to get at it qualitatively. There's a way to get at it with internal client-facing associates who can help you to build it. But at the end of the day, you need to quantify it. And that means that you need to build ways to quantify it, the technology to support the quantification, do it in a method that, you know, you and I would appreciate and not want anyone to touch. Right. And then just systematically do that. So it takes, and then to build the data. So, you know, you need to be able to look at the exciting things like key driver analysis and right. You need some time with some data to be able to do that.
Yeah. And then being able to hook up the data so it's coming through real time or as real time as you can get it. Then present it in a way that it's actually usable for the person who impacts that journey. I mean, that's not that's not easy work.
Right.
And it takes a long time. But I do think that that investment of the time, if you have the luxury, is really important and really changes people's perspective in the organization.
Yes. And then people start orienting around it and it can be a rallying, something that everyone can rally around. And it starts to build like aligned vocabulary and just a great way for teams to talk about key metrics. Agreed.
So cool. All right. Let's talk about the future of CX for a second. Where do you think our practice is going? I mean, it's like, every time I turn around, I feel like there's an article that's saying CX is failing and it's going to be gone. Others are saying like the market's growing by like 15% every year, you know? So like someone's going to have that, right? I don't know who yet, but I'm curious to hear like from your perspective, like where do you see the discipline going?
I can say where I hope it's going. Like, so, and we've talked about this, like in the shorter long term, what you said is so important about being able to build ROI. Which frankly, everyone should want to do in their jobs, right? In terms of what your objectives and goals are, and definitely for CX. I think that's right. A short-term goal is like really to get good at demonstrating behavior change and revenue and all of those good things and really being able to demonstrate the value. Because whenever the articles come out about the failure, they're rooted in that. And the inability to do that. In the long term, you know, I think we're trying to work ourselves out of a job a little bit, right? Like, again, I think the company owns this. And this is, I'm here to be a facilitator and to help and to push forward, like, good best practices that other people can begin to own and have accountability for. So at some point, wouldn't it be great if it wasn't needed because it was embedded throughout the organization? That would be a hope I have. I mean, that is something that you do little by little. Like, once you build something that works really well, it does. It goes, moves out into the business, and yeah, it becomes part of how you do stuff.
That's right. So, I love
what do you think?
I do hope that happens. I think you still need someone or a core group of people to continue to play that COE kind of role.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about customer experience and the work, I think about just the proliferation of technology, the integration of data and systems, and the predictive capabilities. So, yeah, you know, if you're a Salesforce user, you're probably aware of Einstein, right? So I want to maximize revenue for this client. It's literally telling you, here are the three things you need to do to maximize revenue, right? Or, you know, similarly, you know, if a customer and you've got, you know, different feedback coming in, or you got behavioral data, you've got platforms now and the technology is readily available that say this customer is going to churn, or high likelihood, right? So go do X, yes, right? Yeah. So I think it's the more predictive piece. But to your point, then, is you've got to get it out into the business in an easier way. So, you know, the platforms that really invest in UI and UX for that matter, and, you know, are able to integrate all that data in a smarter way, I think they're the ones that are going to be successful over the long term. And I think that's where I think teams are naturally going to get smaller,
yes,
because technology will take on so much more, and it will be 3-4 data scientists, 3-4 kind of like, okay, you know, make sure the surveys are working and the lights are on kind of thing. Right. And then maybe like a lead. But, you know, I do get concerned, like that chief customer officer kind of role sometimes is getting a little bit too big for itself. And do you need, you know, I like the fact that you have it in the C-suite, but is it getting too big for itself? I get concerned about that sometimes.
That's a good question. And to your point, I was having a conversation with a sort of best in class company and that you would know, right? And somebody in the CX team, and just asking how they organize and how they, what their team members do and how big it is. And I was shocked when they said this very big, very best in class, like, company had fewer people than I did in their CX whole team. And when it comes down to it, it is because of what we just talked about. So much of what's great is already embedded into the business.
Yeah, that is the holy grail. All right. Last question. You're a busy person. I want you to be able to finish out your day. Where do you go for inspiration in the CX space specifically?
Well, so from a practitioner perspective, I do like to read. So I can be a book reader. I can go deep on any particular topic. If I'm faced at work with how do you really make sure you're using technology to the best of your ability, I can go deep there. Love talking to people like you. So helpful to have a great network of people you can go to with questions, because we are really all facing the same things. There's so much similarity and you can learn from everyone.
Yeah.
And I also I really still like to read those comments from our clients. I still do that. I do not have to tick mark them anymore. But I really do like reading them. It really tells you something. It's very humbling to read customer verbatims and to listen to interviews and to be part of phone calls. Like, it's makes you absolutely recognize, like, this is why I do it. This is what it's for. We're doing the right thing.
I think we're close relatives somehow, because I do the same thing. I get my inspiration from that sort of stuff too. It's really geeky, but I get inspiration from, well, one, my team and the work they do, but like just literally reading customer comments and just being humbled by the great work, you know, that companies are able to deliver on. But also, like, on the flip side, that same customer is like, well, just go change this too, because this causes pain in my day, right?
Yes.
So, but I love working with you, because you do 90% of the stuff is great, but change this.
Yes.
I get a lot of inspiration from that. Jamie, it's been great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us this week, and hope to have you on again at some point.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, everybody. Another great episode. Jamie Swaljan on the show. We'll see you.
We're out. Talk to you soon,
Thanks
everyone.
Thanks for listening to Be Customer Led with Bill Stakos. We are grateful to our audience for the gift of their time. Be sure to visit us at BeCustomerLed.com for more episodes. Leave us feedback on how we're doing or tell us what you want to hear more about. Until next time, we're out. We'll